We would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the traditional custodians of the land which we record this podcast and pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging. We would like to extend the respect to Aboriginal people listening today. Thank you for joining us on today's podcast. My name's Mary-Anne Ledich and I'm the Manager for Campaigns and Communications. Yesterday, the new Labor government handed down its first state budget since they won in March. And three people that I have with me today were in the room with the door locked so they couldn't tell us what was going on. The first person I have with me today is Todd Pinkerton, Unions New South Wales, Director of Campaigns and Strategy. Jason Mountney, PSA Senior Communications Officer, and Dr. Andy Asquith, the PSA CPSU New South Wales Research Officer. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really glad that we can have a really good conversation. I'll start with you, Todd. How did you feel when you walked in the room? Because I think of the last few years when it came to the budget, it's all been online.
Yeah, it has. So the last, this was my first budget lockup, but in previous years, obviously during the sort of the pandemic, the budget had been taken on what was called a virtual lockup. And so I'm sure there'll be some listeners who know a bit about what the lockup is, but essentially they have a room, they take your phone off you, they lock you in with the budget papers, and this is for stakeholders and media just to get a read through it, a bit of a heads up before the budget's publicly released at midday. Sure. When the Treasurer speaks. As it was my first budget lockup, but I could only really describe it as a little bit like resitting my HSC. Like we sat down, they gave us these booklets, we had to read them really quickly. We had 4 hours in there, so I don't know why we were reading so quickly, but you know, you get these documents, you really got to go through them because when you get out at 12, you want to be able to provide advice to, you know, we were talking to how we're going to put it out in a press statement, what are we going to send our members, how are we going to talk about the budget. So you really want to have got across enough of the detail, had a chance to ask a couple of questions, chew the fat with fellow colleagues in the room. But yeah, I could only really describe it as feeling like I was sitting another exam.
Yeah. Andy, is this your first lockdown in for the budget?
It's my second budget. Last year I was locked in with Jason in Jason's office. So there was excitement yesterday in the sense that first Labour budget for sure. Goodness knows how long, lots of optimism. The atmosphere there was very positive. I think people expected something good to happen. And all round yesterday, it was a fantastic experience and the budget was the icing on the cake.
Great. Now, Jason, you are experienced when it comes to the budget.
So it was my second one. And the
my
second lockup, yeah. Physical lockup. Interestingly, yesterday was different to the previous one in that we were put in with, quote, the enemy, which was the Business New South Wales lobby, whereas previously we were, you know, among all of our fellow unionists in the one room. They left their notes behind, so I picked them up. So this is an indication of the budget. Their notes seem to be pretty positive as well. So that's maybe the kind of budget it is. It's going to satisfy us, and they seemed pretty happy. And the Treasurer came in and visited us and joked, have I scared you, to them. Obviously, he wasn't going to say that to us. And they said, no, you haven't. So that's an indication that we're happy and the other side seems okay as well.
Okay. It's funny that we're talking about the other side now as business, not a different government, but, you know, it is good. So there's still so much that we've got to go through. So to our listeners, if you see the amounts of books we've got to go through and decipher and really get into it, we'll have more information for everyone in the next few weeks. But I think overall we all felt like it was a positive budget. Is that how we feel? Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think even from beyond what's the substance of the budget, I left the budget lockup a little early so we could run up and watch the Treasurer's speech. To see the Treasurer speak to the budget about within the frame and the context of essential workers, yeah, I think was a very positive experience.
Well, I felt like that it really supported our members in particular. Yeah. So you look after all unions, whereas for us, I just felt reading a lot of it, we've campaigned around stopping privatisation. That was our main campaign around the last state election, well, the last few, to be honest, but really we honed in on it this time, about efficiency dividends. It's nowhere, there's nowhere to mention that they're going to cut jobs. So that's really important. So that's a win for our union in particular. The biggest one really for us is the schools, the permanency. We've been advocating and fighting for our members for decades. And it's, I mean, it started before the budget, but to see in the budget that they mention it, and I've been starting to go through the booklet for regional New South Wales because I find that really, really important. We've got 40% of our members live in regional New South Wales, so we really need to see what they're trying to do for regional New South Wales. But they specifically talk about 6,000 teachers and school support and administrative staff, which, you know, for them to actually break that down like that, I thought that was really positive. For our membership, we're already at 7,000 members becoming permanent, and it's not stopping. So, I mean, when you really look at it in the big scheme of things, the last 12 years, probably even longer if we're going to be really honest, there have been people that have been in insecure employment, and with the hard work that our union has done, our members and delegates, and other unions too, because we all fought together, to see those numbers, and we had Juliet and Tanya on the podcast, the last podcast about Recognition Week, and hearing them talk about the members that they talk to that have become permanent. I mean, people can get a loan now. They're permanent staff members. I think it's been very interesting to see that a lot of what we campaigned for have come, it's come to fruition in this budget.
Well, just how refreshing it is to see a government budget where the dot point, they always put some dot points at the top of these are the things we really want to draw your attention to. The things this government's drawing attention to is making casual workers or short-term workers permanent, raising the wages of essential workers. Like, for them to say these are where the previous government would sometimes talk about these as things they had to do, this government's championing them, talking them up as great wins. This is all the work that government should be doing.
Yes.
That's pretty incredible.
I mean, Andy.
I think generally, you know, the whole tenure of the budget has been front and centre recognition of the importance of the public sector. And key to that is the importance of public servants.
Absolutely.
So we see that with the pay rise, we see that with the permanency and the whole tone. And one of the things that was buried deep in the document that took me and Jason ages to dig out was there was just a passing statement to the idea that different parts of the public sector, different agencies need to work together.
Yep.
So instead of agencies that may be sort of quasi-commercial, pursuing their, as they would have done in the past, their own financial objectives, the emphasis now is that they will work together to make sure that the strategic objectives of the government are pursued.
Yep.
So it's people and not money that is now going to drive things.
That's really important. The other thing that they mentioned, which I was really happy to see, is the reduction of consultants. I mean, Unions New South Wales, the PSA, were at a closed inquiry a few weeks ago where we gave our argument in regards to that. And it looks like they're going to hold to that promise that they will reduce consultants to the point that basically you've got very few, which is really important to the membership, not just for our union but all public sector unions, that people have ongoing employment. So that's really good.
I think it's also, beyond our members, it's also better for New South Wales. We're getting decent advice that isn't, as we've seen in the past 6 months in the paper, it's just a horror show of these consultants running contrary to the objectives of the reason they were hired in the first place.
Yeah, totally.
If I could just put some numbers on there, in the last 5 years, the New South Wales government spent $370 million on external management consultants. That's a lot of money and a lot of public servants that could be employed.
Exactly. And it's also public servants that have the experience to give to the ministers about, you know, the public services that we actually deliver. So,
and the passion as well.
Yeah. Well, it's a vocation. That's the one thing we know in the public service. It is a vocation. And our members really deeply connect with that, which is important as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also seems, which I'm really happy, that the Treasurer has delivered a budget without any mention of privatisation.
He does mention it. He mentions it's not coming in yet.
Yeah, as in they're not going to privatise anything. Like, you can't find anywhere that they're going to go privatising things.
And he says it in the first couple of pages. So it's...
Yeah.
As Todd said before, it sets the tone.
Yeah, I think it's really important maybe to mention on that is that there was a bit of a challenge for the government on this budget that was set by the previous government and the now opposition, that they couldn't do all the things that they had said they would do when it came to paying essential workers more, making more people in permanent jobs without privatising. They made this argument you could only really do it by raising taxes or privatising. Well, it seems on face value that the budget yesterday is able to deliver on most of those commitments without having to sell off any more of our public assets. You know, in the my understanding, in the last 12 years, the Liberal National Government had sold something close to $100 billion worth of public assets, which is not just a shame that they're not in public hands, but the revenue that we no longer get from them. Because there's all these assets that the state government used to own that were bringing recurrent revenue and that helps you fund your recurrent costs, things exactly. like the labour costs and costs of public service. So when those things are gone, you get the sugar hit, but you don't get any of the recurrent. So the fact that the government's been able to meet higher wages, create more permanency, still manage to meet a variety of financial investments without having to sell off anything is also testament to, like, I think the hard work they've done and also the hard work of unions in making sure this is an issue that no one goes near anytime soon.
So speaking about privatisation, Junee Correctional Centre's coming up for contract, and we've had a campaign running for a long time called No Prisons. Basically, it's hard to explain if you don't see the visual, but it's no private prisons, and we don't want them to profit from prisons. And that looks like it's going to come back into government hands. So, I mean, one of the positive things that might happen with this government is they might take back some previously sold off public services. I mean, that's important to look at. I mean, it's not in this budget, but I just wanted to mention that whilst we were talking about privatisation.
Well, I think generally that idea is something that is not set explicitly in the budget, but I think the underpinning belief in public service indicates that when this contract is up for renewal, that the internal tender will be favoured, I think.
Yeah.
Because the government, the previous government, just pursued ideology over evidence, where the evidence indicated that the internal tender should have been the one accepted because it was from the public sector, it was ignored. The current government will bring services back in-house. And I think generally there's a moral obligation. If we're going to incarcerate people, then we shouldn't, you know, we should do it ourselves. We shouldn't let someone do it for profit.
Yeah. Oh, that's the position of the PSA as well. Okay. So was there anything specific that, I mean, for us, we didn't talk about, mentioned efficiency dividends in the beginning, but that is massive for us because that means people aren't going to lose their jobs. So whenever anyone in the, you know, the last 12 years, whenever you saw efficiency dividends, I mean, the biggest expense is staff, and you knew that you had to get rid of 3% every year, basically. So that is a massive win for our members. How do you feel about that, Jase?
Well, it's always a really clumsy way to save costs as well. Like Andy would have said, it's efficiency over, it's an ideology over evidence. It's like we need to cut 3% of you, regardless of the fact that 3% of you are probably required to be hired over that sort of stuff. It was just it's something that we look back on as like, that was a very, very strange policy.
Yeah.
And no one will miss it.
Our members definitely won't miss it. And when we go back to the phone banking we've done over the last, we can literally say last 12 years, our members understood what efficiency dividends were. A lot of people go, oh, do they understand? No, they understood what that meant because people were leaving, but their job was still, the job had to get done. So people were taking on extra work. So this should actually be a very interesting time to see the changes in the public service. Are there going to be more jobs? Are we going to recruit more into the public service? And if you do go on to I Work for New South Wales, a lot of the jobs are actually permanent gigs. So, I mean, that's really encouraging. It's not just, there are some temp gigs, but that's really encouraging to see that it's already changed. Mm. So that's a lot of the campaigning that our members and our union have done the last 12 years. So it's very refreshing to see that happen very quick too.
Mm. I'd say that full credit to the PSA and its members on the campaign, as well as a number of other unions that did this in the lead up, well, over the last 12 years, but also in the lead up to the last sure. election, drawing your attention the attraction and retention crisis that, you know, there's a labour market shortage sort of more broadly across the Australian economy and in the New South Wales economy. But within the public service, you know, the period of the pandemic told us that every worker was essential. And I think more than anything, it demonstrated the absolute necessity of the public service and public servants for the role that they play in keeping New South Wales going when so many people were able to work from home or had to be stood down from their jobs. This government, I think, is really prepared to tackle that crisis because we have so many vacancies in roles. And You know, there's obviously vacancies in education and health, but there's vacancies right across the public sort of administration of roles, because without these people doing these jobs, what with sort of every worker, where it was essential during COVID, but public sector workers were so crucial to keeping things going. So this government, I think, it's almost the opposite of the efficiency dividend, in the sense that for them, it's we need to hire more people because we have to hire more people to provide the services we need. In New South Wales, is a third of the country. The public service in New South Wales is the, I think it's the largest employer in the Southern Hemisphere.
That's correct, yes.
Like there are so many, and it's not as if that work goes away when we have the vacancies. The work of the public service is always ongoing, whether there's everyone's in, whether it's at full employment or not. So
it's interesting because the opposition put out yesterday that families were going to be affected by...
I know, and I'm thinking, what about the families of all the public servants?
So we've got over 400,000 public servants, right?
Well, that's only a few.
That's
isn't
just
there?
A few, right?
Do they have families?
Well, you could. Let's just say it's four people in a family. Let's just like even if we average it to three, I mean, that's a whole heap of people that are going to benefit from this. On top of that, the local communities and the local businesses, like
it's a knock-on effect, isn't it? They've put more money into the economy.
Yes,
it's Keynes 101.
Yes, so I really found it interesting how they just do not see public servants as people. They really don't, and it's like this is 400,000 families that are going to be being able to stimulate the economy. Exactly what you said, Andy. So I just found that really interesting yesterday, and it's like, wow, it's, I mean, that's their ideology, I understand, but it's just like, to say those words, what are these 400,000 people? Yeah. What are they to you?
It's like they're sort of on the side of the economy rather than actually being an integral part of the economy.
Yeah. It's quite incredible.
If you look at the response from Business New South Wales, being the obvious example, you know, they were not put off by the budget.
Yes.
And it's a sign that, you know, they're... is widespread benefit out there from the budget. So we all gain.
And it's interesting. It's always interesting to me when they assume that business and public servants can't work together. It's like, no, you need every... I mean, outside the public service, small business is the largest employer in the country. So it always amazes me why they try to pit us against each other, whereas we should be working together to make sure that the community is serviced correctly, right? Because there are some things that the public servants don't do, but that's where the business comes into play. What I would like to bring up after the efficiency dividends is that we successfully on the 1st, no, sorry, was it the 1st? Yeah, 1st of September, the wages policy was abolished. Now, for those of you listening, you would understand how much we've been campaigning around this because our hands were tied. And when it came down to COVID back in, if I'm not wrong, 21, they wanted to freeze us out with a 0% pay rise. And all the unions, all the public sector unions got together and we went to the commission. Now, we got a paltry 0.3%, but we still fought for that. And that policy really tied our hands. And during COVID, what it actually showed was, and members should really understand this, is that the policy wasn't that you'll get a 2.5% increase every year. It was up to. So the wording was really important when we went to court for that. And a lot of people that aren't members don't understand that the unions go in and fight for the 2.5% the last 12 years. So the fact that they've abolished it, which was a huge campaign issue for us, and they said that they would when we wrote to all the parties and the independents, and they followed through on that, which for us as a union, it's an even playing field and there's equity there. And to see that they've actually got, I think it was 4.1% they've budgeted for.
Order estimate, yep.
Yeah, and then also on top of that is the super, which is great. That's what we got this year. But listeners, don't think we're not going to fight for more because obviously we will. But to see that they've budgeted that is so refreshing that they value the work of public service and that they know that they should be paid according to the work that they do. How did you guys feel about it when they were talking about it?
After spending the last couple of years as a unionist and a campaigner campaigning against the public sector wages cap, it was pretty amazing to see the first budget that didn't have it inherent to it as a policy. And obviously there's a little bit more way to go on this. The government's doing a review that's been carried out by Anna Booth about the industrial relations system in New South Wales.
The task force.
And there's a report of that that is due soon, I imagine. And so there's going to be some work about how we get the IRC and we get industrial relations in New South Wales working, because the last 12 years under the wages policy clearly wasn't working.
Now, the PSA has had input into that task force. We put a submission in. We favour the commission to be able to have powers for us to put cases in that will be fair and equitable.
And that, I think that's probably the major part about removing the wages cap. It was less about the quantum or what the amount of money was. It was more about the sort of the bluntness of it as an instrument, the inability for unions to make an argument for a pay rise that reflected the particular circumstances of the public sector. Because, the public sector, as is the second, as the largest employer in the Southern Hemisphere, it's also a very diverse workforce with very different demands. There's blue collar, white collar, there is a variety of skill levels, there's a variety of different challenges. The profile would be immense. So there's not necessarily that the old government's process of a sort of one-size-fits-all approach. That sort of led to, I guess, the attraction and retention crisis that we also had. The inability for us to find public servants to work in jobs, the crisis in, not enough health workers, not enough education workers. That sort of blunt instrument has resulted in that crisis. And so this government's sort of approach is to really tackle that, and to really tackle that by trying to lift wages so we can get people in doing this work. It all comes back, I think, to that attraction retention crisis. Like the opposition, I think yesterday was talking all about the money that workers were receiving as if that's all it was about. Like, it's not about the money. It's about the fact that we have to get people to stay in these jobs to provide these services, because if we don't, that work doesn't disappear. Like, if we don't have enough teachers, kids don't just stop going to school. They still need to be educated, or they don't end up going to school because, but they still have to be educated. You know, people still get sick when we don't have enough people working in our hospitals.
We have a crisis in New South Wales where people are going to other states because they're actually paying public servants better than in New South Wales. And we are, like you just said, we've all said, we are the largest employer in the Southern Hemisphere. Like, that's just ridiculous.
I think the schools ringing the ACT have a particularly hard time attracting staff because it's a very short commute to a better wage and better conditions across the border.
Yeah.
I think here I'm the new boy on the block, so to speak, because I've only been in New South Wales since June last year. I grew up watching Margaret Thatcher slash and burn public services in the UK. I saw the dog's breakfast in New Zealand, but nothing prepared me for what I saw in New South Wales and the way public servants were treated. And I was gobsmacked, really was. And to see public servants recognised now for the value of what they do and the importance of what they do. And let's not forget that during the pandemic, public servants all of a sudden became the safety blanket for everyone in New South Wales. And it takes a crisis for people to realise the value of public servants.
But it also takes a crisis to be over for those people to go back to normal. Because if we talk about some people, and I won't mention his names, I don't want to give him spacey, but there's a particular CEO that feels that workers are not working and they're arrogant. And it's like how we forget very, very quickly. And I know that we don't have members that are cleaners at the moment. But when we look at retail staff, when we look at the cleaners, it proved during the pandemic how important those workers were. And we might be a public sector union, but we're a union. That means we believe in workers. And when you have these CEOs start to, we came out of lockdown only 2 years ago and they've started already. And it's really disappointing to see these people are so miserable and are so rich that they really can't see reality. And it really surprises me. And I agree with you that everything that you said, Andy, but quickly it's turning back to normal, isn't it? But we just do what we do and we fight for our members. I think Absolutely. That's the most important thing. So we're going to wrap up, and obviously there's going to be more, in weeks to come so that we can really have a good look at it and see where we stand. I'd like you all to tell me what you found the most interesting yesterday.
Interesting. I was going to I had prepared for sort of the most, my favourite part of the budget, which I was going to say was the sandwiches they served us in the budget lockup, because I'd heard legend of the budget. But I think maybe it was yesterday at Unity Wales, we put out an email out to just our activist list of our members. And we send a lot of emails, a lot of organisations do. And you sometimes feel like you're sort of sending something out into the void. You never know how it's going to be responded. But I make it a point of just checking in on our inbox that comes back of people responding to it. And the number of public sector workers, you know, everyone right across the sector responding to that email, just really happy. And there's a little bit, there was a bit of, you know, there's a bit more. There's definitely some things we'd like to keep campaigning on. But it just reminds you why we do the work we do, I guess, at a union, because it all comes back to the members and the workers. You know, when they're having a good day, you're having a great day. I think that's going to stay with me the most, I think, out of yesterday.
I think for me, it was the general sort of positivity of the day and what was in the fine print of the budget. And the other thing that stood out was, and when I read this, I thought about one of our members, Kim de Govrick, because there's a feral pig control program, and I thought that Kim would be in his element there.
I did reading the budget wash up. They had the winners and losers. The winners were essential workers, and feral pigs were the losers.
Yes, I saw that.
The government's war on feral pigs continues. Yeah.
I have to say, when I saw that, I thought of Kim as well. Yeah. I have to say, I saw that really quickly, and I just said, Kim. Yeah, no, that was my thought as well. I wouldn't say that was my most interesting part of the day, but yeah.
Okay, so in addition to the essential workers thing, also reading it is that it's the people that we provide services for are getting it as well. So in addition to the feral pigs, we've got $80 million for the fire ants, and I mean that's going to devastate Northern New South Wales if it's not acted. The CEO we discussed before, he can't stop that.
No, exactly.
BHP can't stop it. No one can stop it. It's the public sector, any people can stop that sort of stuff. The public sector are the only people that can spend that extra money, which I'm going to look at right now, for child protection. Again, Kmart isn't going to look after kids who are abused at home. It's got to be the public sector. It needs the money, and it needs the respect, and it needs the staff to be paid properly. And that was the best part of the budget for me.
I loved that, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it today, but TAFE, like, you can see that they want to restore TAFE. I mean, there has been some changes and some money has been shifted, especially with assets. So, I mean, that's something that we have to watch closely. But they're putting money into apprenticeships. So you can really see that's in the budget, which is always good for young people. I think that will help young people get into careers that the country needs.
As the parent of a kid, we're looking for an apprenticeship in the next few years. I was very happy to read that.
Yeah, I thought that was really good too. Yeah.
I think it's very important about this that, you know, for years we have this fixation of going to university.
Yeah.
Devalued trades.
Yeah.
So this is a step in the right direction because we're desperately short of tradies.
Well, TAFE in particular is a respected institution. A few years back, I mean, way before the pandemic, we had our annual conference and I did a session with your former colleague, Mary Yeager, from Unions New South Wales about campaigning. And then we got our delegates I actually ended up with the group with TAFE. We decided to do a campaign around TAFE. But what was so interesting to me, these people didn't work for TAFE, but the respect they had for TAFE was incredible because they gave Class A education.
Yeah.
And vocational education is really important. And we've been campaigning for years with the Teachers Federation as well. And I was really happy to see some of that stuff that's another thing, like what you said earlier, Todd, there's ways to go. Like there's a huge way to go. But, I mean, young people won't realise how much that will affect their lives in the future, which is really, really important. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I think it's important not to lose sight that the scale of the problems created over the last 12 years couldn't be done in one budget cycle.
Absolutely.
I mean, we would have loved that. I'm sure the government would have loved to have done that too. But, you know, this is a good, I think we're describing it, it's a good foundation to rebuild.
Yes.
Right? And that's, you've got to start with the slab at the bottom and we'll rebuild the public service, rebuild the public sector, fix the attraction and change crisis. And, you know, our relationship with the government, you know, there'll be things they'll do that we'll love. There'll be things they'll do that we're not going to feel particularly happy about. But that's why we have unions, because our role is to constantly be pushing, constantly fighting, campaigning.
And it's about our members. At the end of the day, if our members aren't happy with something for whatever reason it is, we go in and fight for them. But at least we can have a conversation with this government. And, you know, we might not always agree, but there is a respect to listen to one another. And I think that that's going to be really interesting in the not only days to come, but the years to come as well. So I'd like to thank you all for participating. Really appreciate it. And I hope our listeners enjoyed the budget rundown.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.